Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin. We got to talk about, as we head into this off-season program that the Bears are doing, PFF has Caleb Williams ranked as a top 20 quarterback. Very interesting. We got to break all of that down. And our biggest questions heading in to this offseason, as there's a lot of stuff as we get into OTAs, as we get into training camp, that there's still some question marks on. Got to talk about that. Maybe a little NBA talk at the end. My daughter's not here to stop us this time, so I might keep it going. Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, getting cracking. I'm excited. All that and more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, what's going on?
Not too much. Getting ready for OTAs, and I mean it's the late part of May, so this is where it's kind of that mad dash to the end of mandatory minicamp, and then lo and behold, it'll be training camp before you know it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, this is the part where you start to see the videos get a little interesting, right? It's like, well, what if Caleb Williams loses the starting quarterback job? It's like, all right, dawg, like, what are we doing here? I literally saw an article. Now, it was from, you know, one of those when you Google it, they got the good SEO rankings, so It pops up. It was like, are the Bears in for a quarterback controversy? And I was like, no, the answer is no. I'm not clicking on this. I don't need to see
the offseason, man. People got to push out content. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. The next one will probably be, will there be a schism in the wide receiver room if DJ Moore is not getting all of the targets or something along those lines?
Why do we always go to the negative? I think that's so weird.
People love a controversy. People love when things are not perfect, and when there is disagreement, because it causes gossip and it causes rumors and it causes speculation, because that's what people love.
Well, you know, I mean, Nick Wright's got a career. Hey, we got to keep this thing. let's jump into this interesting topic to me that was put out by Trevor Sigma of PFF. I hope I'm saying his last name right. Of PFF. Right. He is ranking his top quarterbacks in the NFL, going through his list, and our own Caleb Williams comes in at 19, just ahead of Baker Mayfield at 20. His comments in this are, I'm opening myself up to some criticism here, as Williams has yet to play a single down of NFL football, but I'm a draft guy. So to watch Williams at USC and scout what I think he is capable of in the NFL and rank him below guys I think he's better than, even in 2024, would be disingenuous. Williams has the natural gift to be an impactful football player in year one. He'll be surrounded by some stud receivers and what hopefully is a good offensive line. The big question for him is whether the Superman plays at USC or out of desperation, or if that is his identity. If it was out of desperation, he can be comfortable. If it wasn't out of desperation, he could be comfortable playing in structure. He could be in for a big year. If he continues to play backyard football too much, 2024 might be a wild ride. So a couple of things there. First off, let's start with the ranking. 19th overall. Does that seem a little bit high to you coming into, for a guy who's not played a down of NFL football?
It does, just based on who he's ranked immediately in front of, which is Baker Mayfield. Now, What Mayfield did in his first season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers puts him at the top of the list of free agent signings within the last couple of years. Obviously, they've been pretty good at signing free agent quarterbacks, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They got Tom Brady and he led him to a Super Bowl. But I was a little surprised to see where Mayfield landed. Like, if it was, I mean, the way that I approach these lists are to look, like, immediately you look at who do they have below Caleb Williams. Yeah. And you're not going to find many that you can disagree with when it's Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, even Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, Jacoby Brissett. Like, there's some names in here that I think it's fair to put that out there as, like, as you're doing these predictive lists. Now, certainly things change, but this is based on their prior production and what in a special case with Caleb Williams, like what you're expecting him to be, because we haven't seen quarterback prospects like this. He's not, you know, your average run of the mill, you know, number one overall pick that you see on a consistent basis, where those guys typically have more, you know, they have some flaws in their game, but things that you expect them to work through. Like, we weren't having the same conversation about Bryce Young last year when he was coming in. We expected, because of his size, because of the team that he was going to, that he would struggle. And that's what happened. But I think with Caleb Williams, you know, the backyard football part,
that's a big part to me.
It is. And I think that that's a strength of his, but how that translates to the NFL when you have a vastly different skill set of pass rushers coming at you and your offensive line. Like, you know, the big thing I think with Caleb is that the issues with the Bears offensive line, I believe they think are going to be mitigated by the quarterback that they have behind this offensive line versus his predecessor and the issues that popped up there. The Bears look at this situation with Caleb Williams, knowing that he's going to have things that he has to change about his game, a development period for him. And I mean, that's like the basis of that is how many plays that he ran in the shotgun at USC and at Oklahoma, and how often Shane Waldron's offenses are under center. Like, that's one very important, but very like basic thing that's going to change about his game and getting used to that element. Then how do you factor in the backyard football plays and the off script stuff? And the hero ball is the term that was used there.
Yeah.
It's all relative, but to put him on this list, because there's a couple like new starters, like he's ranking the list here is ranking all 32 starters. So yep. Jaden Daniels is on this list. I believe that the Broncos have Jarrett Stidham. Like, he has him like 32nd. Cause we don't know, is Bo Nix going to be the starter there? Is he not? Right. Sam Darnold's on this list.
He's got them tiered. They're like tiered with different names. Like, tier five is can single-handedly win and lose a game. That's the tier right behind Caleb. Sure. And then it's the next generation. But you're like, well, wouldn't Caleb be a part of the next generation? It's like, no, he's already here.
And, you know, the other thing that factors into his situation that he's coming into is the type of team he's coming into, which has to, we talk about it a lot, but like, you can't underestimate the importance of having a good team around you when you're a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
There are going to be people who look at this though and say, how can you possibly put Deshaun Watson? Where was he? 23, somewhere around there.
Deshaun Watson. Yeah. 23, right at 23. Russell Wilson, 22, Derek Carr, 21, Baker Mayfield, 20.
Those three of the four names. So Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, and Deshaun Watson. All right. So we saw the last 2 years with Watson, it's been a disappointment. Now, is it because of pure skill set? No. The first year he comes back and he's got only a handful of games coming off suspension. He was rusty and the team was not very good around him. Last year, injuries. Like, that's why he's probably listed as low as he is. But I think if you take a look at a side-by-side skill comparison, some people might take issue with that because when Deshaun Watson is good and when he's healthy, he could very well be a top five, top six passer in the NFL, like legitimately.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, but it's all how you decide you want to set up these lists and what, you know, because you're, I guess like the discrepancy here is you're using recent production for these other NFL quarterbacks that are right behind him. And Caleb Williams hasn't played a down of NFL football. So we have no idea how he's going to adjust to the speed of the game, what growing pains he might have with any of that. So then people are going to look at that and say, well, that's not fair to put him above somebody like Baker Mayfield who won a playoff game last year. But I think when it comes to like the Derek Carrs and Russell Wilsons, yes, I know Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl. That was a long time ago. He lost his job in Denver and he very well may get passed up by Justin Fields. If Fields shows that he is a better, the second that Russell Wilson struggles in Pittsburgh, that door is kicked wide open. It's already being left open. It's kicked open to have that conversation. And so I look at that and I think that's why, you know, when PFF was putting this thing together, it's probably one of the reasons why, because the ceiling for Caleb Williams is far higher than a Derek Carr, than a Russell Wilson. I don't know about Deshaun Watson. I still feel like with the, you know, what they paid to get him, they're still expecting a very high ceiling, because that would be just like an absolutely catastrophic mistake if this thing doesn't pan out at all. But for the other two that I just mentioned, Carr and Wilson, you know what they are. We believe we know what Caleb Williams is, but it's the intrigue of what he has around him and what his unique skill set brings to the NFL that, you know, kind of leaves the jury to be out there to think that that's not an unfair ranking, putting him in the top 20. Like, it would be ludicrous to put him anything higher than 19, just based on the other quarterbacks. Like, now you go into who's immediately in front of him. So Geno Smith, Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, like, you're going to take quarterbacks who are experienced. Like, that's just like, you know, full stop. Like, guys who have done this, guys who have won playoff games, guys who have years and years and years of experience, like the five, like, that are immediately in front of him. Of course you're going to put them in front of him. But I want to go back to the hero ball thing, because I think that that's something we'll find out. Like, that's not going to be like a one or two game sample size to be like, does he have it? Does he not have it? Is it a detriment? Is it not in the NFL? Because, you know, his time to throw, like, this is one thing that some of the Justin Fields fans, I think, are still hanging on to, being like, look at Caleb Williams in 2022. You know, he averaged 3.21 seconds before, you know, to throw the ball, and 3.44. I'm reading this now. 3.44 in 2022, 3.21 in 2023. So both of those were slower than Justin Fields in the NFL. Context matters, though. What's the defense look like you're going against? You're playing these spread ass like offenses in the NFL. You know, it's the Pac-12, to be completely honest. Like, nobody's looking at the Pac-12 being like, yeah, world beaters on defense. It's where all the great pass rushers are coming. It's gonna look different than Justin Fields and him hanging back there in the pocket against NFL defenses, often taking way too long to throw, often being the result of his own sacks, versus Caleb and his time to throw. Can it still be a concern? Yes, but do not at all compare this to, well, he took longer to throw in college than Justin Fields. That's, and that was apparently Fields' biggest issue that Bears had with Justin Fields. Caleb Williams is going to struggle with that. He may for different reasons, but it has nothing to do. You cannot compare those two side by side. I think that that's a completely disingenuous argument if you're looking at Caleb Williams' time to throw, thinking that it's the same issue for the time to throw that Justin Fields had, because it's not. How many wide receivers has Ohio State had drafted in the last couple of years? Receivers that Justin Fields was throwing to when he was in college? A lot. How many has USC had? Zero. Yeah. Zero. I mean, yeah, they're guys on NFL rosters who were like UDFAs. None from this year. None from the last year. Like, that hero ball part was something that he had to do out of necessity. Like, I had this conversation with somebody about this the other day. Like, the reason that that number is skewed is because a lot of times they're getting a net positive out of a play where he might be having to hold on to the ball too long, because eventually he's going to bail and he's going to, you know, run around and make something happen. Like, we saw the UCLA game, like we saw the year that he won the Heisman Trophy multiple times. Go back and watch that Notre Dame game from 2022. You'll see a lot of that. That doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It's just, I think that people have like this almost like PTSD, where there were moments where there were receivers that were open downfield in the Justin Fields era, and for whatever reason, he didn't see it. So yeah, he would take off and try to put too much on himself, and that led to his detriment, led to injuries, it led to him not being available. And that doesn't, just because somebody has a high time to throw and there are those elements of hero ball, they're two completely different quarterbacks, and I don't think that you can equate the situations as much as we might be trying to do to justify, like, oh, this is a bad thing about his game. It's not going to work in the NFL because it didn't work for Justin Fields in the NFL. I don't buy that.
Well, I would say that I don't know if it's completely dissimilar, because I think at times both are out of necessity. Now, I do think Justin put himself in bad situations at times last year. He got hurt because he held the ball too long last year. He got hurt because he did not let the ball go, didn't throw the football away, was trying to make something out of nothing. And that's why he ends up dealing with the thumb injury and missing 4 weeks of the season. You can't have that. But where the similarity comes into me is, and I don't know why we're sitting here. I get it. Like, they're college kids, and maybe you want to make them feel better about themselves. USC's offensive line was bad.
Yeah.
Like, we can say that. It's okay. Like, we're saying we don't know if he was playing hero ball out of necessity. Yes, we do. He was playing hero ball out of necessity, because like you said, mentioning with the wide receivers, but also the pressure was immediately in his face. He's trying to create something out of nothing. I think that's kind of where some of the similarities do come in, but that's not a bad thing to me. Guess who else does that? Patrick Mahomes does that. Guess who else does that? Baker Mayfield does that. Now, he didn't do it as much last season, but we've seen him behind struggling offensive lines where he's had to do that. There are quarterbacks in this NFL every single down who are successful in a manner of, hey, my offensive line failed me on this play, but I have an ability to create something. That's not a bad thing. It's a bad thing if you start to miss receivers, if you're missing guys open downfield, when you see the clapping of the hands because their guys are so wide open and you're missing them coming out of their break. That's where, okay, like that's where the differences come in. But I want a quarterback who can make up for the deficiencies of this team, because guess what? PFF also ranked Tevin Jenkins as our most underrated player. I would agree with that, except how many games we getting out of Tevin this year? Like there are things about this Bears offensive line that I know that the belief is it's going to be fixed. We got Ryan Bates in here, which a lot of people have more belief on that than I do, but we got Ryan Bates in here. Nate Davis is going to be better. Tevin Jenkins is going to be healthy. Everything's going to be fine. Braxton Jones figured out a bull rush. But what if they didn't?
Yeah.
I would rather have a quarterback that could create something out of nothing than a quarterback who, I mean, the prototypical guys are the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Manning's, where it was like, if the offensive line let them down, the play was over more times than not because they were going to have to take a sack.
That's like, you're never going to have a situation where you have five like elite level offensive linemen. That's just such an anomaly. And I think that's a complete it's misguided.
Baker's close though. There's still a solid offensive line.
No, I mean, Tampa for sure. But I think that's part of the reason why the Bears are looking at the situation, believing that Caleb Williams, some of the issues with this offensive line in the past, will not become as much of an excuse to why a play fails because he has that ability to bail the team out if it comes to that. What you don't want is a situation where you're reliant upon that too much, or where you think that's like your natural reaction to divert into hero ball mode.
Yeah.
Now, there is a difference between, I think, I want to clarify this. I think there's a difference between backyard football and hero ball. Hero ball to me is when, like you mentioned, you're missing receivers downfield or you're scanning downfield, you're not seeing open receivers. That's, if I'm saying this and this is sounding like Justin Fields, it's because those were some of the issues that we saw with him last couple of years, where he had to, he put too much on himself in those moments because of the deficiencies elsewhere in his game. This is where throwing receivers open, throwing to a certain spots, throwing to guys in stride, and trusting that your receivers are going to do their end of the, make it happen on their end of the play. That's something that I believe that they think is an upgrade in what they're getting with Caleb Williams versus the quarterback that they just traded. So, yeah. You can still do the backyard football things though, because a lot of that is like off script, off platform throws and, being able to, if somebody does get by your left tackle, not having that be, a nail in the coffin, this play is over because I'm going to have to take a sack. Those are some of the things that make Caleb Williams really good. And I don't think that's necessarily to his detriment. It's just finding the balance between relying upon that. And also, within part of that too is can you still make the throws when you need to? We will be able to determine, like, the thing that was, I think, was, watching these USC games and a little bit of his Oklahoma season the last couple of weeks, trying to figure out, all right, what makes him different? What is the upgrade? He will make the throw, or at least he will attempt it. He'll make it, he'll attempt it, he'll do whatever he can, regardless of whether he's got a pass rush in his face or not.
Right.
That's a big difference than what a lot of quarterbacks are able to do for their numbers under pressure, their numbers when they're not under pressure. And I think this is a situation where they believe that is part of the biggest upgrade. So where you're not questioning, why didn't he see that person? Why didn't he make that throw? And if the throw's not there, though, is there a fail-safe? Is there a bailout? And that's what they believe that they're getting in Caleb Williams that they didn't have before, where it's not necessarily a bad thing, because him holding onto the ball as long as he did in college in moments is not the same as Justin Fields and why he held onto the ball that long.
I think it'll be interesting too, right? This is again, it falls on Shane Waldron to kind of, if it is a hero ball kind of mentality where, you know, maybe he's got to feel, he feels like he's got to put it all on himself. Shane Waldron's got to have things set for him. Like you said, fail safes in not only his mind, but also, hey, listen, there's going to be fail safes in his offense. And that's one thing that I think Luke Getsy did struggle with when the play, when your first option wasn't there. I feel like, and maybe it was Justin as well on that, but it felt like it went 1-2 me instead of 1-2-3. And there's the dump off guy that I can get this ball to in a bad situation. Shane Waldron comes in with a reputation of scheming those guys in there oftentimes. And so I'm excited to see kind of, you know, how this offense is going to be built around all of these weapons. I mean, three wide receivers, two tight ends, three running backs. Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot to use here. And
he
so
a very full cupboard. Like, and that's, you know, not that they didn't have those things. I think that that's kind of disingenuous to be like, well, Justin Fields had literally nothing around him. Year two within this offense, it's not completely fair. I don't think that that all of those pieces were utilized properly, but like there weren't. You know, who's the security blanket in those situations? Yeah. But that's, you know, they have more depth than they did previously. And that's a good problem to have, you know, but you have to make sure that you're giving your quarterback every option to where if it's not there downfield, you don't have to make him revert to hero ball mode, as comfortable or as like second nature as that is. And maybe that didn't exist as much for Justin Fields. Maybe, you know, it's two completely different offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
With, you know, same base scheme, more or less, from these West Coast principles, but it's not the exact same thing. So I just, like, you know, him, I'm okay with the ranking. Bottom line, I'm okay with that ranking. It, you know, if it was any higher, you're going to have a lot of people taking that list and, you know, ripping it in half, being like, how can you put him ahead of so-and-so? How can you put him ahead of so-and-so? But like, the good thing for the Bears is you take a look at like the rest of this list down from 20 through 32. He's going to face Anthony Richardson. He's going to face Bryce Young. He's going to face Jacoby Brissett or Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Will Levis week one. Sam Darnold or JJ McCarthy. Like it's a good way for him and the Bears to determine where their growth like process is with Caleb Williams based on some of these quarterbacks that he's going to get to go against in the first 10 weeks of the season who, you know, just by this subjective list, people, you know, somebody thinks that those quarterbacks are not at the same skill level as Caleb Williams. Now the expectations are there. Like, I mean, just, you know, not that this is the end all be all, but I think more people are going to look at and have this sort of mindset of Caleb Williams, if you all 32 starters, that he would be better than at least 10 or 12 guys that are starting right now in the NFL. Like, again, my one that I would guess I'd be a little bit concerned about would be the Deshaun Watson one, because what does Watson look like this year? He's healthy, no more excuses. Like they've got to win. They've upgraded their receiving core this year. The offensive line there is still pretty good. It's never going to be perfect, but I just, that was the one I was a little surprised by.
I think mine that's interesting is I feel like we look at the Denver situation last year as we looked at it the year before, where Russ was god awful 2 years ago. He was a reason why they were losing. Nathaniel Hackett was the main reason, but Russ was a part of that, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like last season, kind of by the end of the year, like Russ wasn't a bad quarterback. They were a bad team by the end of the year. And I think that change, like, I could see Russ having a bounce back season in Pittsburgh. I could see him being able to make the most of the talent that there is up in Pittsburgh and being successful. I think that one probably was the one that stuck out to me more than anything, because I do agree with you on Deshaun, but when players take time off like that, it does take a lot for them to get back. And Deshaun, of course, because of the situation.
He hasn't played a full season since 2020.
Yeah.
Like that's a lot of time off. You're right. And I mean, I think that that's probably, I didn't, you know, his blurb didn't exactly state all of those things, but that is something based on, you know, what the last 4 years have reflected for him. His numbers have dropped. Like, but like him as a quarterback. And again, this is off season talk. This is what we always do when we're ranking, you know, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And you try to go 1 through 32, you got to find a place to put that guy. But are you, how far back on his pass production are you putting him?
Yeah.
And, you know, with a guy like Caleb Williams, his pass production's college. It's different than the Deshaun Watson and the games that we saw him play over the last 4 years, which up and down, and, you know, missing an entire 2021 season. All of those things, you know, it's I think it's really just kind of in the eye of the beholder. Like, do you expect that this is the year, like based on what's around him, based on what's around Caleb Williams too, that that quarterback is going to make the jump? Because they both have that case. Caleb Williams is not, I mean, it's the jump into the NFL versus the jump back from, like, can I get back to that player that I was, like a Deshaun Watson. But that's, you know, the time off does worry me, because everybody's thought this the last couple of years. Oh, Deshaun will be fine. Deshaun will be fine. His talent will be able to trump anything that he's, you know, any time, any rust, any injuries. But look at how the last 2 years have turned out. Like, it hasn't played out that way. Now, I think they're hoping, you know, certainly Cleveland's hoping that it'll play out that, you know, that way this year, because they made a huge financial investment in him.
Football is such a different sport. I mean, like, it really is. Like, when you take time off in football, it is not the same coming back. I remember, the litany of running backs that were just like, we're going to hold out to get our money. And then they'd finally come back and it'd be like, you got paid, but now you suck. And this is sad to see. And now I'm sad that this team paid you. Like, so it's a weird sport, like not taking that contact for so long and then coming back and trying to adjust yourself to it.
Not easy. Really, not easy to jump right back into it. I mean, that's why we're basing that all on projection of, you know, which player can do that best. There aren't many who, you know, have had consistently that much time off where you're like, okay, yeah, they'll be fine. Like when they come back, because eventually you have to show it. It's not just about the projection at that point of, oh, we think he can do this. Well, can you actually do it?
I'll tell you one guy that looks like he's going to do it this season. I'm not going to lie to you. I saw this on Twitter yesterday, Courtney. And if he doesn't have the dark side on his side, I'm not going to lie to you. My God, look at Joey B here.
Did he get a perm? Is that what his hair is?
I don't know what's going on with the hair. Curls? Real 1980s here, Courtney. But I mean, listen, I'm getting Anakin Skywalker. Yeah, you know I mean, he's lost the arm. He's you know, starting to realize, you know, things may not all be good in the Jedi Order, and I got to come back as Vader. I'm getting Darth Vader vibes from this, Courtney. I think that he's got him ranked. He's got him ranked third on this PFF ranking, and Joey B may be coming for number one with that look going on.
The hardest thing with Burrow is that injuries in the off season, the last couple of years, whether it was the ACL, whether it was appendicitis, I believe it was the Achilles, like foot, Achilles, ankle.
Didn't he have one of those pirate injuries too, like scurvy or mono or one?
I know that. I think did he have mono? No, that was wasn't it Sam Darnold when he was with the Jets?
Sam Darnold had it too. I feel like we've seen mono pop up a lot. And I was like, still getting this.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fear is because it enlarges your spleen. And if you get hit and you rupture your spleen, you're not in a good spot. But no, he had appendicitis.
Appendicitis.
I think that was 2 years ago. Yeah, no. Like, so when that feeds into the Deshaun Watson conversation because of the time that you have to miss, because Watson's has not just been the suspension in 2022. It was, you know, the injury with the shoulder last year and coming, you know, playing through that and what this looks like now and having to miss time. Like for Burrow's had multiple injuries he's had to come through. And I know there was one, I believe it was 2022 season where he's like, if, you know, he sat out a couple games. Like if the team was, you know, in position, he's like, I could have played, like if I needed to get the team into the playoffs. Yeah, but nonetheless, like for him to be on this list as a
top three quarterback.
I can understand it because look at who's number one. It's Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, guy who just won the, you know, MVP, somebody who just won the Super Bowl, and then Joe Burrow. So like, if the calf strain isn't an issue, which we don't believe it to be, because he's been out there at OTAs, working out, he's been throwing, his teammates say that he looks good, all those things. The wrist, he had surgery, okay, so is that, and that was in his throwing hand, so is that null and void? Does that not matter? Like, I don't think I can understand the logic here of not letting the injury riddled off season and season before take, you know, take away what you've seen from Joe Burrow since he was drafted in 2020. Like when he plays,
his two healthy seasons are AFC title game and Super
Bowl. Going to the Super Bowl. Like that's, I think that's a fair projection for him because like, you know, had he not been hurt last year, and even if you think about like when he came back and how he looked, yeah, like there were times where a lot of that was the offensive line in Cincinnati too. I mean, the last 2 years, there've been times where like the sacks have just been something that like for him specifically, because I know that all sacks are treated different, but it's, I think that's a situation where I would probably have him in my top five. Like you could probably argue here and there with Josh Allen, putting him a spot higher, but what about the interception and the turnover worthy plays? Like that's something else to factor in. The one that not annoys me, but like the one that like, I just kind of like put up or shut up mode is Justin Herbert.
Like, really? That's the one for you.
I don't know. I mean, top five quarterback, yeah, based on skill set. But like, what has it done for your team?
Yeah.
Can we actually see this play out? And I know, like, this year with a brand new coach, brand new offensive coordinator, they've upgraded their offensive line. Can this finally be the year where we get to see him be a top five quarterback in more than just numbers alone? I just really want to see that because everybody else on that list is, they've won playoff games. Every single person above him has won playoff games. So can we see it, please? Like, can we finally see it? Like, I guess that's just me if I'm like nitpicking a little bit. Like, there's no doubt he's a top 10 quarterback at all. Like, by no stretch of the imagination is that like a bad spot to put him in at number five. But then, you know, like, I just need to see that manifest. I need to see it, like, actually, like, matriculate into something that it has not.
That, I do feel you on that. And I think here's what's funny, right? Like, we hold on to these, this is what this guy should be in a perfect scenario. And then we do a lot of rankings based off of that. And that's how we see these. Because Aaron Rodgers is eight. Aaron Rodgers played 4 minutes last season. How is he eight? Is he going to come back and be Aaron Rodgers? A lot of questions there.
Same thing with the injuries. I mean, hell, like the Deshaun Watson thing. Like, that's...
You know what I mean?
People argue, well, if you put Rodgers there at eight and he's 40, Deshaun's still, you know, under 30.
Yeah.
Yes, he's missed time. Yes, some of it's been injury related. Like, how can you? Recent production to be able to justify putting somebody higher than another person, especially when it's NFL quarterback versus NFL quarterback versus like where Caleb Williams kind of falls in this is the only college, you know, recent college quarterback to be on the list that high.
Here's mine that irritates me. And at this point, I'm not going to lie. This might be hate. Like I gotta sort some things out. Maybe I need to see my therapist about this because I do bring up the fact that he was drafted number one overall and we just don't talk about him way too much. Trevor Lawrence at 12 and behind him is Brock Purdy, Tua, Kirk Cousins. I'm going to throw Kirk Cousins in there and Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. There's no way Trevor Lawrence is better than those four. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I guess maybe Kirk coming off injury, but we got Rodgers at eight. But Trevor Lawrence is losing games for his team, y'all. Like, he's Justin Herbert in this thing down in Jacksonville. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And like, that's another thing. It's like, well, how do you have Lawrence there at 12 and then Herbert's all the way above him at five? It's all based on what they're expecting them to do this year.
Yeah.
Like, 2023 was not a good season for Justin Herbert. Well, was that all his fault? No. I mean, that team was terrible.
They could not.
He was injured, too. Yeah. Like, this is not something that's, like, brand new for the Los Angeles Chargers. But for him to get the ball, for him to stop going horizontal with his passes and to go vertical, like, that was a big part of, like, why I think they had him on this list, those big-time throws. And getting, you know, going downfield with the ball more than, you know, these screen passes and these dump offs and check downs when you know that he's capable of it. But with Trevor Lawrence, the reasoning that they gave, which I can kind of understand, like top five in big time throws, but also top five in turnover worthy plays. And he had 21 turnovers, fumbles, interceptions, all of those things last year. Like, again, though, he was dealing with injuries last year. And he played through it.
Yeah.
The shoulder. So I don't know if that's completely fair. Again,
Purdy behind him, though. The guy that, like, let's be real. He won two playoff games. Mm-hmm. Purdy behind, like, not like the team won. Like, the team does not win if Brock Purdy doesn't go, let y'all hop on my back real quick. I'm a kill Detroit with my legs. They have no idea I got this in here. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, that's the bias against, you know, like, oh, we think this guy is a system quarterback versus he can step out of structure and make something happen, which I know that's happened with Caleb. I mean, people talk about that with Caleb Williams. That's one of the reasons why the Bears think that he, you know, can do, he's such a different quarterback because he can play outside of structure. Trevor Lawrence probably gets more credence in being able to play outside of structure than a Brock Purdy, I would imagine, in the way that this list was formed. And I, you know, I think that 13 is probably a good spot. It's just that you're going to argue maybe like one or two ahead of him when his team went to the Super Bowl, represented the NFC out of it. And, you know, how would Jordan Love have fared if he had Chris Jones barreling down on him in overtime? How would, you know, how would Trevor Lawrence have fared if that was, you know, if the case was reversed? So I don't hate that. I feel like Brock Purdy, that's going to be a system. I mean, it's going to be a product of his system that he's in, and something that I don't know if any list is really going to do him justice, because nobody's going to put him in there as a top 10 quarterback. You're not going to find that.
I think that's crazy to me though. Like to me, I understand the system's in place. Mm-hmm. But the system is in place in Dallas. The system
Dak's
like
the top six quarterback on this
Matthew
list.
Matthew Stafford 7. The system's in place, ladies and gentlemen. You know what I mean? Like, where do we stop that at? Like, Brock, I get it. He's Mr. Irrelevant. He's the end of the draft. He shouldn't be doing this. And so the system's the reason he's doing this. But he's winning in the system. A lot of guys have the system. He's got to the Super Bowl in the system. I would take him from 13. Me personally, I'd take him from 13. I'd swap him and Justin Herbert. I would put him as a top five QB. No matter how you look at it, he put the numbers up. He made the throws. He's the team scored touchdowns because of his.
People argued the completion percentage thing and the quarterback efficiency all season long, and I think it was kind of a straw man's argument. Like, he did these things. They won games.
Somebody had to throw it. The system didn't throw the football.
I know. I hate that. I hate, like, everybody's part of a system. Like, you're part of an offense. You're playing. It's not just like, hey, I'm going out there without any plays drawn up. I'm going to go out there and make magic. That doesn't happen. Like, it's. I think it's, again, I think the biggest thing is the out of structure. When something breaks down, that's where certain quarterbacks get it's where certain quarterbacks find, like, make their hay on these lists, because it's like, oh, well, this guy in that situation, not everything has to be perfect. If something breaks down, there will still be a net positive on this play because of the quarterback. And that's, and bringing it back to Caleb Williams, that's what the Bears hope that, you know, is going to happen with him this year.
All right, Court. Appreciate you guys tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. We've dissected this list pretty well. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, is the offseason, man. This is list season.
I love it. Let's keep the lists going. Good lists like this, though. Good lists. Yeah, I mean, this isn't a bad list. I'm not going at Trevor Sigma over his list. Maybe the first name. I seem to have an issue with Trevor's right now. But I think that this is good conversation, because all caveat aside, he works for PFF. He's doing this based on numbers and different things like that. So this is a numbers conversation for him. We may look at it a little different. Everybody else may look at it a little different. We'll have this article linked in the comments below, so check out the article as well.
It's a fair list by and large. Like, everybody's list is going to be different.
Yeah.
Based on
this is not the most egregious that I've seen. There's some lists out there that are wild. Like,
I don't. Like, I just, if you had a rookie quarterback going higher than, like, where Caleb is, I think that you would have a legitimate gripe with the list.
Yeah, I mean, we're picking one or two guys behind him where we're like, maybe he's ahead of him. But at that point, right, you're still saying he's a top 25 quarterback, where most people are going to say, you know, and I think a lot of the pros, J-Mac, Lance would say, he hasn't played a down of NFL football. He's not going to be better than these guys.
We had this conversation last year in the NFC North with Jordan Love. People are saying, I hated this. I remember I was on Get Up last year in the summer, and of course, list season. This is our bread and butter. Like, we gotta like, my list is better than your list, and here's why. There was a conversation that was clipped, and not me taking a victory lap here, but like, it was based on which quarterback do you want.
Hold on. Take your victory lap, Courtney. There you go.
I don't even really need it. I just remember, like, it was me, Harry Douglas, maybe Mike Tannenbaum. Somebody else was there too. And it was like, which quarterback do you want? Game on the line. in the NFC North. It was an NFC North day on Get Up. So remember, Harry took Justin Fields. Somebody else, there are two people who took Justin Fields. I took Jared Goff. Someone else may have taken Jordan Love, but I think that there was also the caveat of, we haven't seen the guy play yet. Like, come on. And I remember thinking, like, when has Justin Fields shown you this before? He hasn't, like, by and large. And I mean, like, Jared Goff had gotten his team to a Super Bowl. Was he the main, was he like the overarching reason the Rams got there? No, but it's that type of thing where when you are making these lists and you're making these arguments, you have to base it on something other than a flash in the pan and other than like, oh, I think he's capable of doing this.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts. And I mean, last year, like, is there was that unknown about Jordan Love. Oh, could the Packers really do it again? Could they really get themselves in a situation where they have three straight quarterbacks who are playoff winners on a perennial basis and really damn good? Well, one year certainly looks like that, but I would never fault anybody for taking the more known product or for expecting that the, you know, what they've seen body of work from a Jared Goff or a Kirk Cousins at that point over the other two. You can't fault anybody for doing that, because how would you know if you haven't seen it yet?
Yeah, no.
You're basing it off of things that happened years ago. And for Jordan Love, he had been in the league all of those years. Like, yeah. Caleb Williams comes in as a little different because number one overall pick, former Heisman Trophy winner, you know, the numbers.
Rookie quarterback is coming into.
Situation he's coming into. The numbers he put up, like 10 turnovers, 10 interceptions in 2 years, in the back last 2 years. Like, those are things I think that, like, no matter where you are, those things translate. It's not just, you got to find like your spots of what you think can be what you base your argument on for a quarterback who has not shown that he can do it at the NFL level just yet to justify his spot on a list like that.
100%. Absolutely. 100%. Hey, we do want to let you guys know that this episode is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, Las Vegas style gaming, just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off of I-80-94. All right, Corey, let's finish it off with this. I think that this is what OTA's happening here. We'll both be up there on Thursday. Kind of, we'll see what kind of look we get. You know what I mean? We might be at Soldier Field while they're at Halas. We'll see what's going on there. But, there's a lot of questions heading into these offseason workouts for me that I'm looking at. Maybe it's looking at them too early, looking at them before training camp. But what are your biggest questions right now as we're heading into these offseason programs that you're hoping to see answered by the time the season gets here?
The biggest hole still is probably where I start. So it's pass rush. Mm-hmm. When are they going to sign, like, you know, who is it? And when are they signing Yannick Ngakoue? Like, that's just my opinion on it. Like, where
I love it, though. I agree.
Because, like, he doesn't need to be here now. First off, he's still rehabbing. He's not going to be ready until training camp. But can they fix that part of of their defense? Because if that like hole gets filled, like, look out. That's a top five defense from the start of the season versus, you know, middle point of the season to where they finished last year. So I think it's a good situation to be in, to be able to check all the other boxes. Because right now, the secondary looks really, like, on paper, the secondary looks like it's going to be really good this year. You know, they got an upgrade at safety injury-wise, and they believe in an upgrade in playing Kevin Byard. They've got three cornerbacks there that they believe, you know, they're young, they're, you know, this unit has played together before, like the last two seasons. They're in a good spot there. Linebacker wise, they're in a good spot. It's just that hole up front, like, and again, you're not going to get to see what the pass rush actually looks like in the spring, but you're going to get to hear about the development of Austin Booker, how someone like DeMarcus Wachter factors in. Like, he will be the starting defensive end for now, unless there is somebody else that comes in and they are able to go about it that way. So, like, that's probably like my biggest question as far as the things that they still have to do.
We've seen that floated a ton, not to cut you off, but we've seen the Yannick Ngakoue
situation. It just makes too much sense. He's not going to be that expensive, probably in the $5, $6 million range. And he needs a job. He still wants to play football. He's healthy enough to be working out right now and should be ready for training camp. what other, like, and the Bears don't have unlimited financial resources. Yes. I know a lot of people have looked at this and be like, oh, look how much cap space they have. Well, this, again, I'm going to keep saying this till I'm blue in the face. They have to allocate quite a bit of money for these rookie contracts, especially when you have two players that were drafted number one and number nine overall. So
I think they came in 16 mil. I think at least 14 mil of it has to go to this rookie class when you're talking about Rome and Caleb being in there.
Yeah. And I mean, there's ways to like finesse that. And there, I mean, like with salary cap and ways to like structure things, but that's the whole, like, can they bring in a Ryan Tannehill or a veteran quarterback? That's part of why they're not doing that, because the finances that they have to allocate towards a rookie class, it's very expensive. That takes priority, but
Is there any, I guess my question, we've all been floating this. Are the Bears interested in this? Does this seem like something the Bears would be open to, bringing back Unique and Guy?
From what I've been told, they are open to it. And this is something that I don't think they're in a rush to do, because there's still time. Like, hell, veteran players do not want to be here. Watch them re-sign Mercedes Lewis for, you know, another one-year deal. Like,
the day before training camp.
Yeah, like, if that happens, vet minimum deal. The guy is a huge part of, like, veteran leadership, showing that, like, that is so invaluable to have someone like him in the locker room still, even though this team is older, even though this team has built a culture. Like, he was a big part of that last year, and I would not be surprised if that one happens either. Not that saying it's going to like affect much on the field. But it's that one would not surprise me either. I think that they will end up bringing it back.
I would love Mercedes Lewis, but I'm not gonna lie. I was like, that's the one guy that I was like, if you get him back, I think that it's just,
unless
not,
he goes to Vegas, unless he wants to play one more year with Luke.
Yeah.
The relationship is not the same as it would be with like a Shane Waldron, cause he never played for Shane Waldron, but
that's true.
Could happen.
Maybe we'll see, but I did love Mercedes just around the building. He was such a good dude, always smiling, always ready. So he was very cool. The one thing I talked about this yesterday, though, my big question, it is in the trenches, but opposite side. I guess, where's your confidence level right now that the center position is fixed on this team? Coleman Shelton, he's done it before. It's probably a reason he was let go, though, I would assume, right?
Usually a reason that guys hit free agency.
31, I want to say, for Coleman Shelton. So it's not like he's, no, I was completely wrong. 28 for Coleman Shelton. Center like that does not get let go for no reason.
Yeah, and I mean, the same thing. Well, I mean, they really like Ryan Bates. They liked him enough to try to get him one time before. It didn't work. And then the second that they had a chance to trade for him, they did it. And, you know, he is going to be the starting center to start. If things don't pan out, they have depth. They didn't have that same sort of depth last year, or even in the last couple of years, where, you know, you were taking guards and converting them to centers. It just didn't work. And so I look at this situation with the offensive line. I think, to me, the bigger question is probably going to be, is Braxton Jones going to be good enough to get through this year? Because I think that they eventually would like to upgrade that position if he's hit his ceiling, which would not be a bad thing, because he's been a starting left tackle the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Is there another level to his game that he can unlock this year? Because if that's the case, then that's a big win for the Bears, big win for him. But how that position plays out, because what we know about Karan Amagaji is that he's not going to be ready to do anything until training camp. I highly doubt that he's going to be challenging Braxton Jones for a starting left tackle spot this year. And even Ryan Poles said that. They believe he has starting potential, but it's probably going to take some time before he's able to do that. So there's no really rush to try to like force something there. But that's one that I want to look at like closely in training camp to see how he's progressing, what he looks like, and how that affects what the Bears offensive line, you know, can be, because that's a question. Tevin Jenkins' health is a question. The new starter is at center is a question. And then Nate Davis and his availability from like last year, and he was dealing with a lot of stuff that hopefully is not going to be the case for him this year. Like, your only really consistent thing that you knew was Darnell Wright. So, and that's, I mean, but like,
and he had one arm.
this year is going to be a big year to see if this offensive line, if the gamble that they took on some of these positions pays off.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting there's a lot of belief around this offensive line right now that, to me, I'm still like, I'm in wait and see mode, but it just seems like the belief is Caleb Williams is here. He's going to throw the ball a lot quicker. He's going to get the ball out a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And so the offensive line will skyrocket and be a lot better. I would love to see it. I think that's kind of my last big puzzle piece heading into the season. Are we going to be ready for that? I mean, listen, that is pretty much a show. I we can get some quick picks in here, but we can't go in depth on the NBA. I mean, we can do whatever we want, but realistically speaking, Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals, getting cracking off here, Courtney. What's the series you're watching most? Is it that Western Conference Finals? Is it Ant-Man and...
I have loved watching, because like when I was up in Minnesota and I covered a couple Timberwolves games here and there, like the Dwayne Wade, retirement tour. I remember I got to cover my first Timberwolves game that year. I covered them when they were in the playoffs and they lost that series to the Houston Rockets. To see how far they've come, to see what Kat developed into and like all the criticism around him, and for him to kind of get that last laugh in game seven. Now, for this team is fun, and I've really enjoyed watching how they, like, Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards, that combination. Some people are saying it's a new MJ and Scotty. Let's slow our roll with all of that, but that's...
Let him get a ring first.
I know, and I really like the makeup of this team, and I think they match up well with Dallas. I really do. Like, they're going to have somebody who can actually, like, guard PJ Washington. Like, simple as that. Like, PJ Washington, you know, this is his first playoffs where he's first playoffs, I think, period, since he came from Charlotte.
Gotta be his first playoffs, right?
Yeah, because he's young. And I mean, like, they gave him a pretty sizable role. And yeah, like, in he filled that Grant Williams role better than Grant Williams did. So that's.
But Draymond, say you found a way to talk yourself out of a playoff team.
Yeah.
should stop talking.
It's funny. But no, I mean, I'm pumped about that. If that goes, I don't know if it'll go seven. If that goes six, that wouldn't surprise me. And then the other series, I think it's unfair to Indiana to assume that this is going to be sweep, gentleman sweep.
Yeah.
But Boston, my God, if they don't make this happen this year, what a freaking waste. Like, you're going to get Kristaps Porzingis back. You're going to have, they have the easiest path to the NBA finals, but my problem with this team is, when have Tatum and Brown consistently been on the same page for an entire series? There's always one game where it's like, what the hell is that guy doing? Versus like the other guy. Like, I think Jay Williams put this the best. It's one is fire, one is ice. They're never both like fire and fire, ice and ice. Like, whichever one I guess you'd want to call like the good thing of that. Like, happened during the Warriors series 2 years ago, happened against Miami last year. I do not trust Boston because I haven't seen it yet. So, I'm not saying that, like, I still think that they get out of that series.
Yes.
I just don't think it's going to be as easy as everybody expects it to be. Indiana's a damn good team. But they really are. And they can push the pace of play with the way that they get out and transition. You know, they take like 20 more shots than other teams, like each game. And they took 20 more shots than Boston the last time that they played them in the regular season. And Kristaps Porzingis was playing in that game. So, I'm excited for both. But if you had to ask me, like, what a more... Like, what I think is going to be a better series will probably end up being the Western Conference Finals.
It's so funny. Last night I did Locked On NBA and we talked about, you know, who does a title mean most to, going, you know, with the big name players. And it went Halliburton. I was like, title doesn't mean anything to him because he ain't going to win it. there's a Reggie Miller situation coming if he finds his way to the NBA Finals. I'll tell you that right now. But Luka Doncic, Anthony Edwards, or Jason Tatum. And the name I threw out there, and I think this is interesting, if Anthony Edwards finds a way to win, outside of everybody else, if Jason Tatum wins, he shuts the haters up.
Yeah, like it's kind of like, I hate when people are like, finally, because he's 27 years old.
Yeah, there's a lot of time.
At this for so long, it seems. Like, it's kind of like, how did he not win one yet? And I guess you're stacking that up against other players who have won them, you know, before Jason Tatum did.
Which I mean, most of them didn't. You know what I mean? Most of the greats won around 27, 28. So if Tatum starts winning now, that could be 5 to 6 years of winning. And we sit here and go, oh, he's one of the greatest players in NBA history. But to me, and I think this is pure storyline, pure narrative, pure facial features, If Anthony Edwards wins, the NBA will make him the face of the league. And I don't think that happens with anybody else. If Luka wins, Luka shuts the haters up. He destroys all the Phoenix fans. But I don't think that he becomes the face of the league. If Tatum wins, I don't think he becomes the face of the league, because people are like, well, the time for you to do that has passed, which it hasn't. But the time for you to do that has passed, and so we're looking for the next guy. If Anthony Edwards finds a way to win an NBA championship at 22, he will be the face of the NBA, because people love his mindset, love how he's humble on or off the court. And he's like, no, there's other great people. Stop comparing me to Jordan. Stop doing this. But then on the court, he's shrugging. He's got the tongue out. He's doing all of this stuff that you're sitting there going, I think this guy knows he's being compared to Jordan and he's egging it on. There is a want to see him be the next face of the NBA. And I think winning an NBA title could do that for him. And if he gets there, I don't know if Boston can stop him with the kind of defense that Minnesota has played.
I mean, like, they're number one defense from the regular season for a reason. And that's, you know, that was something that when it looked dire against in those three games that Denver won, like when they start out 2-0 and then like they fall into a 3-2 hole, like that's what was missing. They rediscovered that. And, you know, it's the forcing of the turnovers. It was the offensive onslaught that they had after halftime. Yeah. You know, that was the largest game 7 comeback from halftime in NBA history. Like, I had to think about that. I was like, damn, is that 15 points like in game 7? Like, yeah. I mean, it's not small. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That one surprised me when I heard about that.
Especially with how the Warriors eliminate 20-point leads on a regular. You would think but I guess they're probably up 20 heading into most of those fourth quarters in games like that. It's going to be interesting. My bold prediction for the Western Conference Finals, people are going to remember why Rudy Gobert is the Defensive Player of the Year when he's not playing Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I love that. It's like, this is the most fraudulent award ever. It's like, Jokic is like the best player in the NBA.
Exactly. And I mean, game 6 was by far his best performance as, you know, with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And we remembered why he was Defensive Player of the Year in that game.
We'll see what he ends up doing. I'm excited about the playoffs. Playoffs get started tonight. Tap in with that as well. Eastern Conference Finals tonight, I believe, right?
Tomorrow.
That'll be a lot of fun, but I will be looking ahead to that Western Conference Finals series. I'm not going to lie to you. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star view. Y'all know what to do. For Courtney Cronin, I'm Pat the Designer. Back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Drop a bear down in the comments below and let us know any of your thoughts on the Caleb Williams ranking on this list, and of course, your biggest questions heading into the 2024 offseason programs. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Peace.